Welcome to the big interview on today's show, and I'm very pleased to be joined right now by Adam Peck. He is the founder and chief investment officer at Riverwater Partners. It's an interesting firm, a couple years old. He's a former manager with Heartland Advisors, specializing in small and mid caps. But he's got this firm, which has been around for a couple of years, which, well, it qualifies as ESG, so environmental, social, and governance, and you know what we otherwise might be called social investing. But it also kind of has an interesting twist, because a lot of times everything that is social seems to be only in the screens. But when you look at Riverwater Partners, everything that is social and all those other issues that underpin it seem to be really all throughout, even how they want to interact with each other and everything they do. It's a pretty interesting firm. And if you want to learn more about it, you're going to go to riverwaterpartners.com. Adam Peck, welcome to Money Life.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we always talk about different styles of investing. And fundamentally, you are a value investor, but you are a value investor investing with your values. And like I said, you can't be on the Riverwater Partners website without getting a sense that your values are about a lot more than just how do we screen for stocks. So explain how you imbue values into value investing that are more than let's go buy something cheap.
Exactly. So we call it values investing, working on a trademark. And essentially we're looking for value ideas that fit within our construct of doing well by the environment, the society in which they operate, and have good corporate governance structures. So we also like to think about it in three buckets. We're trying to buy companies that are exemplary within the environmental, the social, and the governance. We have a smaller bucket where the companies have just started on the journey and are moving along pretty quickly. And then we've got a third bucket of companies that haven't really figured it out yet. And we work with them actively to get them going.
So when you talk about working with somebody actively to get them going, that actually leads to the question I was going to ask. Because with different firms, when they're doing some measure of social screening, the sense that I always have is you can kind of screen the universe once, you know who your social investments are, you know who your, don't want to call them antisocial or what have you, but you know who the investments that don't meet your screens are. And now that you've got that decided, you can then say, this is the kind of stuff we buy. This is the kind of stuff we avoid because of whether it's price earnings ratios or other values and other metrics. But for you, the idea here is that the values are always changing. So that screening process has to be a little more ongoing. But how often does somebody go from, I didn't meet your screens today, and a year from now or 2 years from now, they do?
It can happen, but it's typically a much longer journey. And the way we're realists, so we understand that there's no perfect company, and there's no company that would be in quotes perfectly evil, just like any person. And all we're looking for is to find companies that are great values, but can also make the world a better place. So even if it's an oil and gas company, you know, that is kicking out hydrocarbons, that's using a lot of water, that's using diesel in their operations. They're not benefiting the environment, but if they can have less of an impact over time, we think that's a good thing. So as an example, that third bucket I talked about, we'll work with a oil and gas company and explain to them why they should start setting targets for what their diesel usage is, what their water usages, are they flaring their natural gas? Is there something they can do to capture that natural gas, reduce carbon dioxide emissions? That's essentially when we look at values, what we try to do is every company we engage with, we want to make sure that over time they are becoming better corporate citizens.
But that raises an important question, one that my audience I'm sure is asking, which is why would that large company or potentially large company, and I do recognize that you often focus on smaller companies, but why would they listen to you? I mean, for many of my audience members, if not all of them, today's the first time they're hearing about Riverwater Partners. That's not to say that you haven't been around and doing things. It's just to say you're not coming in and saying, hi, I work for Vanguard, the largest financial services firm on earth. You might want to change things. So without that kind of backing, how and why do companies listen to you?
Right. They listen because we explain to them that it's in their best interest. if you were to look at Google Trends, if you just type in Google Trends and you type in ESG, the searches for ESG are at all-time highs. And that's because the two groups that are most interested in ESG investing are women and millennials. A study done by Morningstar a few years ago asked a bunch of cohorts, what is your interest in or ESG investing? For millennials, 85%, women, 75%. Financial advisors was more like 5% that were highly interested. Clearly a difference in supply and demand. These are the people that are going to own all the stocks. Women today control 51% of the nation's wealth. By 2030, it's forecast they will control 67% of the nation's wealth. Millennials, by 2050, will have approximately $30 trillion transferred to them. These are the groups that care about the E, the S, and the G. And corporate America has figured that out, that they're going to be their shareholders and that they should change the way they operate. Corporate America also understands that who they need to hire today are millennials, and this is what millennials want. So it is in companies' best interest to start going down the ESG path so that they can have a sustainable business that makes money 5, 10, 15, 20 years into the future.
Let's take this away from the ESG side and get to the investing side. We have seen a market that the rally is long in the tooth. It has had some periods where small caps have done well, but for the most part, this has been a bull market driven as much as anything by large cap and growth. You are somebody who prefers small cap and value. Small cap and value due for its day before this market winds up taking some major setback?
I believe it is. And what benefits us is that we do not invest in the market. We invest in a focused portfolio of 20 to 30 holdings. And so we believe the idiosyncratic drivers of our holdings can, to some degree, be the yin to the market's yang. So our performance has held in with the markets, but we clearly have holdings that are not at all-time highs today. And I believe even if the market takes a header and reverses course, that we have stocks in our portfolio that can still do well.
In terms of areas of the market where you're finding those stocks and areas that meet your screens, are there places that you might wish you could be in, but because of the social screens, you cannot do it? And are there places where here's where you can make hay, given both value investing, the market that we have, and your agenda?
One area of the market where we don't invest in is tobacco. From just a financial standpoint, would I be okay investing in tobacco? Yes. If you go back to, I believe, the early 1920s, the best performing stocks over the last 100 years have been tobacco stocks. You end up with a product that is addictive. So you get recurring revenue, and they also have pricing power. So they can price along with inflation or above, and that is a very good business. We don't invest in tobacco because we believe it doesn't benefit society, but there are other companies that we own. One instance would be a company called Verso Corporation. The ticker symbol is VRS. They are one of the country's largest paper manufacturers. So today, the paper market is controlled by about two companies, Verso being one of them. Clearly, demand for paper is declining as everything goes online. So newspapers, magazines, even white coated free sheet paper has been in decline.
Yep.
But why we think Verso is interesting is because the supply of paper is actually now declining at a faster rate than demand, which gives Verso pricing power. What you're seeing across the industry is that the paper manufacturers are figuring out that demand is declining and that the Amazon effect has taken hold. And most people are now using Amazon to buy toothpaste and soap, and that's being shipped in a cardboard box. So they are en masse transitioning their paper manufacturing to cardboard manufacturing. This is what's driving the decrease in supply at a faster rate than demand. So we believe that Verso is very well positioned to do well in the future because they will have, in our eyes, decent pricing power over the next few years.
We're almost out of time, but is there another example of the kinds of things that you like right now?
Sure. Another example of a company we own is called Iridium, ticker symbol is IRDM. They are a satellite provider. They have a constellation of 66 satellites that are in low Earth orbit. The reason low Earth orbit is important is because it does a better job of connecting people when it's raining outside. If you have a satellite TV, you'll know when it rains, you get a tough connection. So that's important because the U.S. government, as a user of satellite radio doesn't, or satellite communications, phones, that is, doesn't want to have the phones go down when it's raining. So they're a big customer. Why we think it's an interesting story is they just finished, they spent $2 billion on a new constellation that will actually allow radar over the entire globe. So if you remember MH360, the aircraft that went down in the Pacific, no one still has been able to find it. With the new system, they have planes will never go missing. And the benefit from environmental standpoint is because radar doesn't work over the oceans, planes can't take direct routes because they don't want planes crashing into each other. With this new system, planes will be able to fly in tighter patterns, more direct routes, saving over $750 million a year in fuel for the airline and less CO2.
Yeah, so you can see why there's promise there. There's a lot of promise in all the things we've been talking about. This has been really great. Adam, thanks so much for the perspective. Good luck with the company. We'll talk to you again sometime.
Thank you very much.
That's Adam Peck, everybody. He is founder and chief investment officer at Riverwater Partners. You can go to riverwaterpartners.com to learn more about values investing and the way they apply their values and more, their values perspectives worth taking a look at on the website. Okay, we're halfway in to the Monday, June 24th edition of Money Life, but halfway, come on, we're just getting warmed up. Up next, Sam McBride will be here from New Constructs. You know what that means.
Danger, danger.
Yep, we're heading for the danger zone when we come back right after this message.